Leon Draisaitl and Zach Kassian have been playing well for the Edmonton Oilers of late, scoring regularly as the team tries to claw its way back into the NHL wildcard playoff spot conversation as the regular season ticks down. What have they done to elevate their games?
I'm Jim Matheson.
I'm Derek Van Deest.
And I'm Craig Ellingson. I talked to these beat writers for the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about Draisaitl and Kassian, and about the effect Andre Sekera has had on the Oilers' defense since he made his season debut last month, and about the Bakersfield Condors, the Oilers' minor league affiliate that recently claimed a 17-game win streak in the AHL. This is the Oil Spills podcast for Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. We could talk about this quest to make the playoffs from now. We've been talking about it all year. Can this team make the playoffs? And quite frankly, we're going to have a whole month of it. So we have about a month left in the schedule. Less than 20 games to go for each team. 17, 16 games left for everybody after Monday's games. Because I wanted to talk about Hitchcock and what he said about his team after the Columbus game, that they're a damn good team and they're going to be tough to play against the rest of the year. And well, that remains to be seen. You know, as we sit here right now, they've won three in a row, but, you know, there's certain people that stand out. And obviously the likes of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl will always stand out since they're the two leading scorers in on a vast majority of the Oilers' goals. But, you know, Leon Draisaitl has 41 goals and, you know, he's second in league goal scoring behind Ovechkin right now. And clearly he's taken his game up a notch, I would say, since Christmas, or at least this calendar year. What is Leon Draisaitl doing differently now than, say, at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think his shooting percentage is probably higher than it's been. He's one-timed a lot of pucks into the net, shooting the puck more than being a puck distributor on his backhand, although he did make a great backhand pass for a Darnell Nurse goal last night, and that was the MO on Darnell play, or on Leon playing junior, that he would look into the glass and see the reflection and see people behind him, and that's how he made so many great backhand passes in junior. So just shooting the puck more, and his shooting percentage is higher than it's been. He's got the same stick. He's got one of those paddles for a Jaromir Jagr paddle too, and it doesn't seem to matter what part of the stick it's on. There's lots of stick there, lots of blade there to shoot it in. And will he score 50? That's still 9 goals in 16 games. He's on pace. You know, he seems to score every game now, but that's still 9 in the last 16. Still a chore, but it's been a long, long time since anybody got 50 goals for the Oilers. And will he win the Morris Richard Trophy? Probably not, because Ovechkin, next thing you know, he'll get 2 and 2 and 2, and he'll be up to 50. But it's certainly a flip the switch for Leon, who's been known as a passer. And that $8.5 million a year now, which everybody decried going into the year and last year as an overpay for the Oilers, now looks like just a fine salary at $8.5 million if he's going to finish in the top half dozen of the league in scoring.
Well, I was going to get you 50 goals a year. That's obviously a very good contract for you. The way I see it is Draisaitl was a slow start. He's a notorious slow starter, and he admitted he started slow. But now he's really kind of, as the season went along, he kind of found his legs and found his game. And I know sometimes he gets a knock for being a little lazy, because when he moves his feet, as Ken Hitchcock has said, he's a very effective player. Is when he's kind of gliding around the ice, is he's not. The thing I see about Draisaitl is that he's an elite finisher. Like it's an innate skill to get those opportunities. It's another one to finish those off. We saw that one yesterday with Palmenville tripping all over himself, unable to score an empty net. He just has this calmness around the net to be able to almost slow the game down and find the net and score the goals. And even on the one-timers, he's picking the corners on one-timers. He's not just how many times you see a guy fire a one-timer and hit the goalie right in the crest. He doesn't hit goalies in the crest. He makes them make a big save on him. He's picking corners, and when he's in tight, he can lift the puck up in tight. So he's got that great innate ability to finish, and that's something that not a lot of players do. A lot of players kind of panic when they're in those situations. The game seemed to slow down for him. So, obviously, playing with Connor McDavid and playing with a talented player like that and getting those setups helps. But I think he's still got to ring the bell when he's in those positions.
I think if you're a team on the power play, you're probably thinking, give us a break here. You've got two of the seven best point producers in the league killing a penalty against us. You're not trying to kill it. You're trying to score on it. And they did, you know, McDavid. I don't know if, we all grew up playing hockey, and lots of people play pickup hockey or junior hockey. You can't believe how difficult a play that was that Connor McDavid made a pass in his feet. He's going fast, and he kicks it right up onto his stick. And then, before you can get to MC and McDavid, it's over to Draisaitl, it's in the net. That's NHLers. Most NHLers can't make that play, and that's the best player league in the world, and Connor made it look easy.
Yeah, I would actually say that Draisaitl's, his puck handling skills are elite. It's not just his finish. Clearly he's been getting fed from McDavid for some of this, but he makes some incredible passes himself as well. He's quite the saucer deliverer.
Yeah, he's got great vision, and I've long contended he's the best backhand passer in the league. He passes the puck better on his backhand than any other player in the league. And I think part of that is because he has a relatively big blade and a very relatively straight blade. You see, Sidney Crosby has a very straight blade for that ability as well. And I would put Draisaitl 1, Crosby 2 in that, in just that aspect alone, just his ability to make that backhand pass and put it right on the tape. And I think you're right. He's got great vision and great ability to make the pass. And put it all together, you got a very, very good hockey player.
Well, and he's going to finish with about the same number of goals as assists, and that's usually not the way it is in the NHL. Like, Kucherov is leading the league in scoring, but he's got, twice as many assists, more than twice as many assists as goals. Leon could be a, 45 guy, a 90-point player. And his backhand is... You'll get an argument from the guys in San Jose. Joe Thornton's a pretty good backhand passer too, and he's been doing it for a long time. So, but yeah, he's, and when you score goals, it makes it easier to play, because if you're just a passer, the defenders, especially the defensemen, he's only passing. I don't have to worry about him shooting. But when you can score too, then it doubles the trouble for the defenseman.
What did you see from Draisaitl those two games when McDavid was suspended? When they played Anaheim, the first game, and I thought Leon, obviously his play didn't suffer. If anything, he stepped in to fill the void.
You're right. They keep saying that this is McDavid's team, and I guess it is McDavid's team if he is the most exciting and perhaps the best player in the league. You get an argument on Crosby and stuff, but I think he likes a challenge now, and I think he's feeding off his success. And when Connor was gone, I really think he just said, okay, I'll take the bull by the horns, and he certainly did in Nashville. I mean, he was outstanding in Nashville. He was the best player on the ice by a country mile, and that improves his resume too. When a star player like McDavid is out and you can still play well, it's much the same as Malkin and Crosby in Pittsburgh. They've had a lot of situations where one player's out and the other player has to carry the team, and they've been able to do it. And if you can do it, if Leon can do it without McDavid, that it just increases his value, not only to the Oilers, but in terms of winning awards and perhaps one day winning a scoring title.
I find it stunning that it's been 31 years since an Oiler scored 50 goals in the year. And even that season, Craig Simpson was traded from Pittsburgh to Edmonton, so his totals are with both teams. He scored 56 for the Oilers that season, his first year between Pittsburgh and Edmonton. Why has it taken that long?
The league changed for a while, though. The scoring went way down. Like, just a 50-goal score in the league was hard to find. There was one time...
Unless you were Brett Hull.
Yeah, and there was one time where you'd have two, three, four guys to get to that mark. Now, it's hard to get to that mark, and I think the league changed, and you can make the argument it diluted a little bit with you know, there was a time where you'd have three real scoring lines and a checking line. Now you could make an argument and you have one, maybe two scoring lines and two checking lines. So it's changed, but now they kind of rewrote some rules to kind of increase the scoring and increase things like that. And that's probably one of the big reasons why.
Yeah, but 3 decades to have it. Like the last guy to score 40 before McDavid did it last year was Kalima in, what, 92? I mean, that's incredible to me.
Well, there's only been 5 players score 50 goals in the last decade.
Really?
And Ovechkin's got it 5 times, and Stamkos has got it twice. I think Corey Perry did it once. So only 5 different players have scored 50 goals in the last 10 years. So it's difficult. Scoring is way up. You know, certainly the top 10 in scoring is going to be way higher this year than it's been in many a year, with several 100-point players, I think. But scoring goals is still difficult, and it's even more difficult now with the way teams video other teams and the way, you know, checkers back check and stuff. It's difficult to get 50, but you're right. Back in the day when the Oilers were great, I mean, they had to get 4 guys in one team score 50 goals, you know, and we thought nothing of it. Now it's, I can remember when Jimmy Carson got 49 the year he got traded for Gretzky, and we didn't even think that was a great year. He got 49 goals. We just figured, yeah, it was a pretty good year, and he got 49, and he wasn't that great a player.
You know, speaking of scoring goals, Zach Cassian recently got double digits on the road trip here. Now he has 11, I believe, on the year. But he's only the 5th Oilers forward, you know, after McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Alex Chiasson to have that many goals. And, you know, Zach Cassian's game has elevated it here over the last month or two. There was talk about him being a potential chip to play at the trade deadline for the Oilers. Tell me about Zach Cassian and what he's been doing to score and be effective.
Well, he's
playing on McDavid's line,
well,
for starters.
I think the thing with Cassian was a highly touted prospect coming in because he's big and strong, could skate, and had good hands. And I think we're seeing that right now. I think the problem with Cassian is his play has been very inconsistent, and sometimes he just goes missing and nothing happens with him. But I think right now you're seeing a guy that is playing on top line minutes, and he's playing with some talented players, and he's showing off that he does have some good hands for a big guy, and he can keep up. And that's all. That was always the big thing with Cassian. Physically, he has the ability to play with some of those big, big players, some of those high-end players. But I think it was just a matter of putting him in those situations, and sometimes he just gets lost, and I think that was the big thing with Cassian.
Well, think about Jack Cassian. I mean, he was taken in the draft before Taylor Hall, 09 draft, if I'm not mistaken. And he was a top 10 draft pick. He was he taken 9th or 10th by Buffalo that year? I mean, yeah, I know he's came with the toolbox, but it's taken 10 years. And it's not to say he hasn't shown, you know, flashes of that in his career with the Edmonton or even throughout his NHL career, because we did, you know, a couple of years ago in the playoff run, he was an important player for the Oilers. And you do see it, his puck handling abilities and his skating are certainly very good. But, you know, here we are, you know, I guess not every high-end junior player ends up being a, you know, top 6 forward in the NHL, obviously. You know, there are plenty of drafts where, you know, your first-round pick doesn't end up being an impact player.
Well, in his case, he was picked where he was because he could skate and he could fight, and he had some pretty good hands. And I think for the most part, he's settled for being an NHLer. And obviously he had some problems off the ice for several years in Vancouver and then in Montreal before he got to Edmonton, before he straightened, you know, his life off the ice. But I think he settled for just being a penalty killer fourth line player. And I think he's got better ability than that. He really should be a third line right winger if he can score 11 to 15 goals. He should, and he's got 11 now. The goal he scored last night was like a Leon Draisaitl goal, a one timer and a pretty hard pass from Connor that skipped and he rifled it right by the Buffalo goaltender. So that looked like a guy who was a first round draft pick. So he's got the ability to play with better players, as he did with the Sedins in Vancouver every now and then. His problem is consistency. I don't know whether that's getting satisfied and comfortable and not working as hard to get to that spot, playing with the better players or what, but really, I mean, he should be a third-line player in today's NHL if he can skate and score between, you know, 11 to 15, and he's got 11 now, so good on him. He's, you know, he's taken the chance, and a lot of guys, you know, play with Connor and don't do it, so, and he is doing it, and everything he did last night was right except missing the net on that one chance, and the puck went around the net, and Buffalo came down on a 3-on-1, and Eichel scored, but other than that, he's doing a lot of things right.
Well, I remember suggesting Cassian should play on the top line or top two lines with, give him some time with Connor McDavid two years ago. And yeah, I got kind of berated on Twitter for making such a crazy suggestion. But the reason I saw it is because he can skate. He's a guy that can keep up, and he can, from A to B, he gets there. And like I said, he's also got some pretty soft hands for a big guy. So I thought, well, put him out there, see what he can do with him. And you also want a guy that, you know, hey, Lucic was supposed to be that guy that no one, yeah, I'm on McDavid's line, no one's going to mess with McDavid. Well, if you get Cassian on that line, he does the same thing, but he can be effective offensively, and I think we're seeing that right now.
Another player, Andre Sekera. He came back, what, was it a couple of weeks now he's been back in the lineup? What kind of a difference have you seen in the Oilers since he's returned?
More calm in the back end, and it's given the Matt Benning a regular partner, and Matt's game I think has been quite good the last several weeks. This is obviously Sekera's way better this year coming back from his Achilles injury than he was the year before, where he was coming back from a torn ACL with a brace on. His skating's better. He's able to get back to pucks, you know, he's more sure of himself, and I think as the games wear on, his minutes will go up. They're still, you know, only giving him, you know, 15 minutes a game total, you know, 13 to 15, not closer to 20, which he's used to. But now you can put him out killing a penalty if one of your penalty killers defensemen is in the box, like, you know, a Russell or somebody like that. So I think it's not a trade, but it's kind of like getting another defenseman. We can play every game. And right now, the Oilers have six defensemen that are playing every game. And it makes it easier on the coach.
The Bakersfield Condors recently had their 17, you know, they had their winning streak ended at 17, which is pretty, pretty remarkable. And we'll see what happens here for that team in the rest of the year. And obviously, you look at and see what they did, and you wonder how many of these players can come up to the Oilers at some point in time, next season, season after, and fill holes for them. We already have seen a few AHL players, you know, recently Josh Curry, Brad Malone, etc., come up and play, Caleb Jones. But what does a streak like that do for a team, even in the AHL? And how does it translate to up here? I guess it remains to be seen. We're not talking about any potential Connor McDavids down there, but we are hopefully seeing some potential third liners, fourth liners. What is Tyler Benson? What is he projected to be?
Well, this is the thing. I think, you know, it's great what the Bakersfield Connors are doing, but just because you have a good AHL team doesn't mean eventually you're going to have a good NHL team. You're looking at the roster, and you go, okay, maybe this guy will make it. Maybe they have maybe four or five guys that might be able to become NHL players. So you really kind of have to take that success with a grain of salt. It may not transfer here. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's just a matter of you have some veterans and you have some good AHL players. Doesn't necessarily mean those good AHL players are going to become good NHL players. It's kind of like if you have a good junior basketball team, does that mean that you're going to have a good senior basketball team? Not necessarily, because sometimes those guys don't make that transition to the next level. So it's great for the Bakersfield Connors. I think it's exciting for the franchise to have this type of success, but I wouldn't put too much stock in it. You look at that roster, and I don't think they have a score in the top 25 in scoring in the AHL. So they're doing it by committee. There's not one guy that's doing it. I think if anything to get excited about is their goaltender, because their goaltender is playing lights out. So maybe he's a guy that suddenly you can pencil in as a backup next year, and bring up, and he's developing quicker. But I wouldn't translate success in the AHL to success in the NHL by any means.
Although there seem to be covering two bases down in the minors. Not only are they developing some players, but they're also winning. And that's always, it's a very fine line to walk as a minor league coach. You're supposed to develop and you're supposed to win too, and often the two don't go together because you have too many young players. And I think the revelation is that obviously Jay Woodcroft's a pretty good coach. You know, the jury was out on Jay as to whether he was just a career assistant coach who'd worked with Todd McCullough for a long time in Detroit as a video coach on Mike Babcock's staff with Todd, then San Jose, then Edmonton, and people were wondering, okay, you're in your 40s now, are you just going to be an assistant coach? And he went down to the minors, got his own team, and he's done a nice job. I mean, it helped that he got Dave Manson to work with the defenseman. And Dave, you know, came from Prince Albert and has obviously done a nice job with Caleb Jones and Lagesson and Bear and the other defensemen down there. But I agree with Derek. You look at minor leagues and you say, okay, how many of these players can be regular NHLers and how many are just call-up players? And I still think they feel that Yamamoto can be a top six winger, but he has to prove it in the minors that he's too good for that league before that happens. And Benson, I think, should probably stay down there for the start of next year as well with Marotti. But next year they're also going to have three more players. They're going to have, you know, perhaps Evan Bouchard on defense. They'll have Ryan McLeod, the center, down there, and maybe Maximoff, the goal scorer from the Ontario Hockey League. So that's three more young players to fit in, and so that's three more players to look at. I think what they were looking at was players like Gambardella and Russell and those sort of players who could come up and fill fourth line roles for cheaper money than they're paying fourth line players now. And then worry about the offensive players, some of those younger players down the road, and hope that they could sign or trade for an established goal scorer this summer. So, but it's tough to overlook 17 wins in a row, and they lost a game and came back the next game and won 5-2. So it wasn't like the streak ended and then they started losing. So they are doing something right.
The Oilers still have to hire a GM, but, and assuming Hitchcock is not coming back next year, would Jay Woodcroft be a candidate to coach the Oilers?
I don't think so. I'd be surprised if he's actually in the organization next year, to be honest with you. He's done a good job in the AHL, but I think the GM's going to come in, and he's got his own guys, whoever he brings. And I wouldn't rule out Hitchcock not coaching next year. I think if he wants to coach and the coach comes in and says, okay, I can't find a better candidate than this, take them on for a year, see what happens. I can see that. Jim would know better than I do, but this year is either kind of fired, stoke the fire, and can Hitchcock keep coaching, or has either cemented the fact that maybe he doesn't have the heart to do it anymore and put in those long hours. But I wouldn't count him out. I think he's having fun still.
I agree, he's having fun. I mean, it's agony a lot of days, misery, as he says, you know, with winning and losing. I still think he likes coaching. He likes being around the rink. And you're around the rink as a coach, it's tough having a lot of input when you're an advisor. You know, you're going to watch the minor league team play. So I have no idea who they're going to hire as a general manager. Usually the general manager likes his own guy. But, you know, there's nothing to say that he couldn't, you know, test drive Ken for a year and then see who else is out there. You know, if you get a young general manager coming in who was an assistant GM somewhere else, usually they would like a young coach as well, somebody they know, whether you're McCrimmon or Mark Hunter or you know, anybody else, you know, Norm McIver, Bill Guerin, anybody like that who's an assistant GM, they would like a younger coach, but I don't know. And in Jay Woodcroft's case, I think he's got a taste for being a head coach, but it would surprise me not one bit if Todd McCullough got a job next year and Jay Woodcroft was on his staff somewhere else. And I think Todd McClellan can coach the L.A. Kings if he wants the job, because Rob Blake was the captain of the team when Todd was coaching in San Jose. So I think he could probably get that job. If Buffalo misses the playoffs, maybe that there's an opening there too after 2 years with Phil Housley. So, but you know, the GM thing is going to be going on for quite some time, and I found it very interesting that, you know, I know George McPhee says, well, you're not talking to Kelly McCrimmon until our season's over. So, you know, this isn't like some other sports, you can talk to baseball or something. Your team's in a World Series and teams are talking to your bench coach, or the NFL where teams are in the playoffs and you're talking to the linebacker coach from the Patriots because he's going to coach your team. So in hockey, a lot of times they want their season over before you talk to their personnel.
You know, I should have tried to work it in before, and there's probably more recent examples. So I was going to bring up John Cooper, you know, coach of the Lightning. He coached in the AHL, I'm not even sure how long. Norfolk team. Didn't they have a really long streak, winning streak a few years ago, back when he was a young, wet behind the ears minor league coach, 28 games or whatever? Anyway, but the 92-93 Cape Breton Oilers, they won the Calder Cup that year. I went and looked at the roster, coached by George Burnett, who ended up being the Oilers head coach, two seasons later, but didn't last very long. But, you know, that roster in Cape Breton, this is 26 years ago, you know, had some serviceable NHLers, many of which didn't play that long with the Oilers, like Sean Van Allen, Sean Podine, et cetera, on and on. I wrote down, what's my list here? You know, Kirk Maltby played with that team as well. I mean, so who knows? I mean, I'm not saying that the Bakersfield Connors are going to win the Calder Cup this year, but, you know, if history means anything, there might be a few players out of there.
Yeah, there might. And I think there'll be three or four guys that might make
it. Well, in John Cooper's team, there was four guys on that team, Palat and Tyler Johnson and Panic. And I think Gudas, the defenseman, was on that team too, that, you know, when they got the 28-game streak. So that's four players out of a team that won the Calder Trophy and had 28 straight wins. So that's the only four players that made it to Tampa Bay, you know, as regulars. So, you know, it's difficult. But in today's game, the problem is you sign these players to rich contracts in the NHL. You'd like to bring up lots of minor league players to fill out, but you're locked into some of these players for long-term contracts at, you know, $4 million, $5 million and up. And while you'd like to fit in some younger players, you know, in your salary cap, there's just not room for them, for very many of them. There's room for usually bottom six players, but not your high-end players are making all that money. It's difficult to bring up a young guy when you're paying all the other guys $4 million and up to play in the top six.
I forgot to mention Ian Herbers was on that Cape Breton team too.
Probably a leader and probably a puck moving phenom, if I remember Ian Herbers. Shut down, I'm sure.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to her show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.